Mitzvah Reish Samech Dalet 264, Mitzvahs Inyan Tumas HaKohanim LeKrovehem. The requirement for the Kohanim to defile themselves for their family members. Remember, last Mitzvah we were just talking about how Kohanim are ordinarily not allowed to come into any sort of contact with a dead body that renders them tummy, but for certain close relatives, they're actually required to do so. V'klala shi'is ablu kol echad mi'Yisrael shisha mikrovav hayiduim. So this is included in this mitzvah is the fact that any Jewish person has to mourn for the six close relatives that the Kohen has to defile himself for. Which is interesting because they seem to be two completely different things smushed together in one mitzvah. We'll discuss that a little bit later as we continue. Sheyitamu ha-Kohanim likroveihem hanizkarim ba-Torah. That the Kohanim should defile themselves for the relatives that are mentioned in the Torah. Shenemar la yitama. That to her, meaning in that specific subject of that verse, is an unmarried sister. So for her, the Kohen should become Tamei. V'zeh mitzvah, meaning for all these relatives, not just for that one relative, but for all these relatives, the specific mitzvah that they should become Tamei. V'zeh mitzvah, so say, this is a positive commandment. Shekein ba perish alav, v'chein hu meforesh b'sifra, that this is the received interpretation of this pasuk. And it says in the Halachic Medrash as well, lo hitama mitzvah, lo ratzo litamei, mitamei nosa bal korcho. Let's say the Kohen feels extremely spiritual and holy, and he says, I never want to come into contact with a dead body. Let someone else take care of my relative's burial. So no, you force him to take care of the burial, and even if doing so, he has to become tummy.
I mean, I suppose I've illustrated before, but there is a distinction between a sister who's married and a sister who's unmarried.
Yes, not for Avelos nowadays, but as we'll see in a few minutes. But
she has family.
Yeah,
right. Can take care of her.
Okay. Right. Basically, yeah.
Except she doesn't have other family.
Okay.
Vilulei Shiki Balnu. There's more about sisters. We'll get there. Vilulei Shiki Balnu Mechachamenu Aperish Kain. So this is the received interpretation of our sages, but if I didn't have this, I'd think, Ayisi Savorlo Marshia Rishus. And the Torah is just telling you that it's optional for the Kohen. Normally, he's not allowed to become Tamei to anyone, but for these relatives, he's allowed to become Tamei if he wants. Imrotze mitamei vimrotze eino mitamei. Lefisha kozu meno mehat mitamei leshakrovim. Vayisa omer shebeilu aniskarim aparsha hirshuhu. You can if you want. It's actually a mitzvah, not an optional thing. There's a ma'isa in the Gemara. Ma'isa shebab Yosef HaKohen. There was someone named Yosef HaKohen. Shemesa ishto be'erev Pesach. His wife died on the day before Pesach. Velo ratza litame. He said, I don't want to become Tamei. Not only am I a Kohen and I'm never allowed to become Tamei, but it's almost Pesach. If I bury my wife now, I'll be Tamei for 7 days and I will lose my chance to eat the Korban Pesach. I'll have to go to Pesach Sheni. I don't want to do Pesach Sheni, the Nebi group that does it a month later. I want to do Pesach Rishon with the rest of the normal Jews. Udchafuhu chachomim v'timuhu ba'al korcho, where they took him to they carried him kicking and screaming to the funeral home. And they threw him into the funeral home to the extent that so that he would become tummy and do his wife's burial. So you see that it's a mitzvah that the Kohen must become tummy for these people. So it's actually a machlokes rishonim. This is the way that the Chinuch presents it, but it's actually a machlokes rishonim exactly to the extent to which it is a mitzvah. According to the way he presents it, you get the impression that for some reason you didn't actually take part in this relative's burial. You're a Kohen. And everybody's being taken care of by everyone else without you ever having to lift a finger. And you're saying, oh, great, I get out of it. No, there's a specific mitzvah that during the course of the funeral, you have to become tummy at a certain point to this, for your mitzvah, to carry the body or whatever for 1 second, yeah?
So, in other words, it's not simply a question, obviously, you know, there's an obligation to make sure that you're, you know, take care of the body, you know, the body is taken care of. It means specifically you have to do it in such a way that you become Tamei.
Correct.
Oh.
That's the way the Chinuch presents it. However, the Arishonim who say not like this. The Arishonim who say that you're only allowed to become Tamei. In other words, it's a shaila of what we call, this comes up in certain many areas of halacha, which is what's called dchuya or hutra. Is it set aside or is it completely permitted? What's an afkamina? So in other words, like on Shabbos, for example, when you have a situation of pikuach nefesh, so is that dechuya or hutra? Meaning, when you have a situation of pikuach nefesh, do you not have to give it a second thought at all? that you just do whatever you need to do without any restrictions and second-guessing yourself whatsoever? Or are you supposed to be becheshben? Are you supposed to try to do every stage of the process? Obviously, there's no time, then that's part of the dechuya would be that you just do whatever you need to do. But if at all possible, do you try to minimize the Shabbos transgressions as much as possible? That's the shaila by that. So the same thing is over here. That the question is, according to the way Zin Prachinuch presents it over here, that tuma by the relatives is not only hutra, but it's a mitzvah. It's a completely permissible. You should do it. Go ahead. Whereas according to other Rishonim, is dechuya. That if, in fact, you have... I mean, it's hard to imagine a situation where, even according to other Rishonim, that you wouldn't have to become tummy at all. Because, for example, let's say they're having a service with eulogies, and the service wouldn't be complete unless you, the Kohen, gave a eulogy in the hall. So if that's the case, then everybody agreed that you...
Maybe it's outdoors, you know.
Maybe it's outdoors. Maybe it could be just as good, right? If right, so maybe according to that shita, right? But if so, according to the other shita, that if you can get away without becoming tamei, then you can. You're only allowed to become tamei for the purposes if you are actually needed to care for the dead body and provide for its needs. As a machlokas, even within that shita, whether you're only allowed, the kohen is allowed to become tamei only for things directly relating to the requirements of burial. So, for example, there's no one else to bring shrouds or to dress the body to do the tara, whatever. Then you're allowed. Then you should, can, and should do that. But for example, you're not allowed to be a shomer. For example, just sitting and watching the body is something that Jewish people do. That's we don't leave a dead body unattended until the burial. But since it's not an active requirement for the body to have its proper covet and to have the proper burial, then the Kohen would not be allowed to do that.
Can explain that again? Why is it not...
Even according to the opinion that the Kohen should try as much as possible not to become Tameh, then there's a question as to whether if he is the one who's needed for the requirements of this corpse, mm-hmm. whether that applies only to active things like making sure that the shrouds and the tara are done properly, or even to passive things such as just watching the body.
It's all together.
Washing your hands is not because of tumah per se, it's because of ruach ra. It's like a spiritual negative force that dwells on your hands after certain activities, such as going to the graveyard. That's why the same reason as when you wake up in the morning.
Yeah. Washing hands doesn't help you for tum anyway. You have to go to mikvah. You know, so.
Right, and for a mace, you need para duma.
I know that, but
yes,
not
yes, you're supposed to do.
It's not tumah.
It's not for tuma, the raisa tuma sense. Uh-huh. It's a more colloquial tuma that's like a negative spiritual force that's resting on your hands.
I never noticed.
Yeah. I guess, yeah, it's just not a cemetery has negative associations, death,
so if it's
whatever.
So like Nagelwasser, I should take off my ring. Which I can now take off for the first time after 27 years. Anyway, so now I'm discovering these halakas I haven't...
Right, I mean, if your ring is... Right, I mean, right, this is more kal even than Nagelwasser, because Nagelwasser also serves the purpose as the being the official tilas yadayim for davening in the morning and for saying brachas. This is more, not as stringent even as that. And especially if your ring is loose, there are reasons to be lenient. Okay. The chas of a Rambam zichrono levracha v'zos be'atzma hi mitzvahs ibul, that this mitzvah in and of itself is the mitzvah of avelos for anybody, not just kohanim. Kilomar shekol ish miYisrael chayiv lihisabel al krovav. Any Jewish person has to mourn for their deceased. Kilomar shisha misei mitzvah hanizkarim bakasov. The six types of relatives who are mentioned in the verse. So what are the verses? What are these relatives? He's going to enumerate it later. We can do it now. It's six: father, mother, son, daughter, paternal brother, and paternal unmarried sister.
What about your mothers?
No, they're not the Raisa. They're Rabbanan, you do. We'll go
you're say. Not talking about the brother of the father. You're talking about...
What?
You're not talking about the brother of the father, the uncle.
No.
Sibling, which is only
correct. So we say brother and sister in terms of these... The Raisa mitzvah, according to the Rambam, the Raisa mitzvah to perform avelos, we're talking only about paternal siblings. But again, we have other, he'll say in later, that Chachomim added on extra people for whom you have to mourn. the mikra shehevi, and he say mesei mitzvah, which is interesting because a meis mitzvah, a dead person who's a mitzvah, normally refers to a corpse that has no one to bury it. So here, the idea is he uses it in a slightly loose manner. That's saying a meis mitzvah, meaning that somebody for whom you have to perform mitzvahs, the mitzvah of avelos. But there's also something called a meis mitzvah, which is also something that a kohen is allowed to become tamei for, which is a dead body that has no one else to bury it. So if the kohen is walking along the path and he finds a Jewish dead body, and
how does he know it's Jewish? Well,
if it's in Eretz Yisrael or something, or the assumption being that the body will be Jewish, or there's a good reason to assume the body is Jewish, and he calls around, hello, dead body here, I'm a Kohen, I'm not supposed to bury this, hello, anybody here? And there's no one there to bury it, so then the Kohen is allowed to bury it himself. Fine.
Allowed to or mandated?
Should, yes. Should, he should bury it himself. So that's another example of a thing that a Kohen is allowed to become 24. So another pasuk that the Rama brought to support this requirement of avelos derais is what it says by Aaron HaKohen. V'achalti chatos hayom hayitav b'nei Hashem. That on the day that Nadav and Avihu died, Moshe Rabbeinu said to Aaron HaKohen, said, you need to eat your chatos, which is part of your duty as a Kohen. So he didn't eat it. They burned it. So Moshe Rabbeinu got angry and he said, Aaron, what did you do? You were supposed to eat your chatas. Why didn't you eat your chatas? And Aaron said, because I'm in avelos today. My two sons just died, so would God be pleased if I ate his holy sacrifices on a day of avelos? So that's another indication that maybe avelos is deraisa. Because it sets aside the proper eating of the korbanos. V'omar, d'mechozek achov azos be'eru habakohen shu muzer al hatumah. So because of, in other words, the requirement of a Kohen to become Tamei for these six relatives is based on the fact that he has to perform Avelos for them. It's a manifestation of Hilchos Avelos,
right.
Which is interesting. That's the way that the Rambam learns. She Tamei al Kaponim Kishar Yisrael. They shouldn't be any worse than any other Jews who are required to mourn for these people and engage in the proper seeing to it that they'll be buried properly. So that the requirement of avelos should not be weakened. So the Kohen has to be just as any other Jew and perform proper avelos, which includes becoming tamei for these people.
Did Moshe Rabbeinu say that Aaron
died
before Sinai?
No.
Almost everything.
Shavil's Yom Rishon Doraisa. So the Rambam holds Vehu Yom Miso Kvura. That this is based on the Rif and the Geonim, who hold that Avelus, the only Doraisa Avelus is the first day, and only then when the death and the burial took place on the same day.
Mm-hmm.
That is the only day of Avelus Doraisa. And we'll see later the Sefer Chinuch will bring the other Shitas about what is Doraisa, if anything. So that means, just think about it, if you have someone who dies late in the afternoon, so it's Yom Misa, and then they're buried, 30 minutes before sunset, then you only have 30 minutes of Avelus Deraisa, which is very interesting. And it says in Maseches Moed Katan, Avaleinu Noheg Aveluso Baregel, that even if somebody dies on the holiday, in the middle of one of the holidays, Asi Asei Derabim V'Dochi Asei Deyochid, that the requirement that applies to the entire Jewish people to rejoice supersedes the requirement of mourning that applies only to certain individual people who have just lost this family member. So that's why, very, very tough, very, very tough, but that's why the Rambam also deduces from this that Avelus is the Raisa on the first day, because the Gemara has to say that the mitzvah asay to rejoice on the festival supersedes the mitzvah asay to mourn. And if Avelos weren't deraisa, so maybe the Gemara wouldn't have to say such a thing. Okay, we'll get to the other shitas at the end. V'inein is hisbayor shechiyuv Avelos deraisa v'hu mitzvah asay, aval b'yom rishon bilvad, only on the first day. V'nishara shisha derabanan, the rest of the 6 days of what we call the shiva, v'afil ha-kohen yinag aviluso b'yom rishon v'itami likrovav v'avein zeh. And the Kohen it also has a velus on the first day, and understand this. Fine. So the rest of a velus, we know we have more than just one day of a velus, is all derabanan. according to the Rambam. This shows you how part of Judaism doesn't really function without the Derabbanans. That's such a basic facet of Jewish life as we think of it nowadays, is the Shiva and the Shloshim and the 12 months, and all that is for certainly the Derabbanan. So it's very interesting to contemplate.
What would you do without all these prohibitions?
No, it just wouldn't be. The Jewish life wouldn't work. Jewish life wouldn't work. Just think.
Supposing that Shabbos without the Derabbanan, you wouldn't recognize it.
Right.
It would be a different item.
You're like, you
could light a match with your mouth. You could, Shabbos would be unrecognizable, like you said, 100%. So it's we have to take a step back sometimes and recognize how woven the Derabbanans are into the fabric of Jewish life. Really wouldn't. That's how it's designed. In other words, it's not that God said these are the Daraisas, you're going to add stuff. No, the point that the Torah was designed to be instituted in the way that the Chachamim instituted it. Right. Mitzvah, what's the reasoning of the mitzvah? That a person is moved based on the type of actions he does. Since a person is a material type of, exists in a physical plane, so the physical actions that a person does affect how the person thinks. Val Kane Bevo, you don't think that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now this part you're not going to like. I'm just warning you ahead of time. Val Kane Bevo Elav Onesh Mikre Maves Becha Mikrova Dasharateva Mechayev Ha'ava Lahem. That if you are punished by the death of a close relative that naturally you love, Tischayvenu HaTorah Lazos Maisim Ba'atzma Asher Yoruhu Ligboa Machshavto Atzar Shigielav. So when a person that you love dies, so the Torah requires you to do certain actions that indicate your distress at the death of this person and the punishment, basically, that got to you because of the death of this person. One second. That once you sit in the Shiva and you just sit quietly and you think, and then you have the Shloshim, you have all these restrictions, that's going to move you to think about your sins that caused this to happen to you. Okay, oh, 1 second. Let me finish the paragraph. Yeah. Then you can talk. Then we can discuss. Okay. Hashem lo yanem ilibo vayage b'neish. That God doesn't willy-nilly just punish people and make people sad. Ki mitzad chatoim. It's only because of sins. V'zosi emunaseinu ashlema. That's our full belief. Anachnu balei das Yehudis haikar. We Jewish people. V'sei sa'adam elibo inyan zeb b'maisa avelus yoshis daito lasos tshuva v'yachshir masab kivich kocho. According to the Chinuch, Avelus is a manifestation of a required tshuva process. That since somebody you love died, it must be some sort of divine wake-up call. So during the course of Avelus, you're going to have the time to think and realize what you did wrong and change your behavior so that this doesn't happen to you again in the future.
I could get this as being one facet of what's going on, but it's not all about you. The person died has to do with whatever's going on with the person and God or the rest of his family.
Excellent.
It's not all about you.
100%.
You can take this as, oh my God, that's safe for the family, but I'm also taking this as a wake up call to whatever, but it's not about me.
Right. We'll get it in the next paragraph. We'll say that. It's an excellent point, but I just like to say that at this point, that I think modern psychologists would give a different Mishorshei HaMitzvah to the laws of Avelus. That if you look in contemporary books that discuss laws of Avelus, it talks
from
about
from
the
books
Jewish...
Or...
Yeah, from books. Oh. It talks about how... I mean, maybe even I saw some psychological thing that talked about this as well. But how the laws of Avelus are really designed to get people back into society.
Oh, mm-hmm.
That in order to give you a break and transition back inside. If you think, I remember one time... I don't know, it was either someone died who wasn't, the family was not at all from, it wasn't even Jewish, and my parents said, acquaintances of ours, so then my parents said, the person died, a couple days ago, previously to when I was having this conversation, and then my parents made a comment about their child being back at work, just a couple days later. That's the way it's done. I said, how could that be? That's so anathema to us. So when somebody dies, you take a break from work. You take a 7-day break from work.
Sit Shiva.
Right, you sit Shiva, exactly. But anyway, they say that the laws of Avelus are not necessarily designed to be, different facets. I'm not saying that.
Right.
But not just to tshuva and think about what you did wrong. but just the chance for first during Shiva, people come to comfort you, and then during Shloshim, also less comforting and fewer restrictions, is just designed to process your grief and get you back to being a functioning member of society. It's also very good for people. That people who are heretics, and that they think that everything that God created, wonderful things, are just nothingness and vanity. Yoshisu oven belibam hara. They put sin in their bad hearts. Yislu mos b'nei ish lemikre hazman. They say that death is just from living too long or having an illness. But it's a completely natural thing. It has nothing to do with God deciding that it's your time. I remember that a couple of years ago, there was a period where, I think within the course of a month or two, some major league gedolim were nifter, all very close to each other. So all the people were saying, the dashonim, we're saying that we have to, the Kali Yisrael, we have to wake up, we have to do tshuva, that all these calamities are befalling us. So I remember my first reaction was somewhat skeptical, like, all of these people are over 100 years old.
Thank you.
You know, like, oh, what exactly? But
the
that's
way of the world.
Right, but that's not just the way of the world.
If
the Kali Yisrael wouldn't have been deserving of their death, they might have lived till 150. I mean,
120.
I mean, the people live after 120. Ramoshe Soloveitchik, by the way, the Rav's father, always used to say that Ameya the Esrim is a klola. Why would you limit someone to 120 years? Maybe they'll live longer. Like Jean Calment, whatever her name was lived to 127, I think. Lady in France, the oldest.
The woman in Italy was 127 years old. She didn't die yet.
127, are you sure? Nobody's broken Jean Camus's record, I don't think.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, whatever.
Okay.
But you have to realize that they would live even longer, that every death is some sort of punishment, both to the person that it affects and to the remaining relatives and friends. You have to keep that in mind. That's the Jewish way of looking at it. A person is just like an animal, that they just die when it's their time. Kimoze, kein moze, v'alkein kasu v'sifreim sheyisarfu. So it says that these books should be burned because they don't contain good ideas, okay? But it says that they have a turn of phrase that anyone who worries at all is to be pitied. In other words, not a fully intellectually developed person if you ever worry, because life is just about pursuing pleasure. So somebody dies a little bit younger, they just a little bit less meat, a little bit less delicious wine that they'll be eating in their lives, a little bit less one fewer movie that they will have enjoyed. Big deal. It's not such a big deal. But that's not the Jewish way.
Take me now.
That's not the Jewish way. The Jewish way is that we view life as very sacred, and any time it ends is something that has to be taken with the gravest consideration. So there's no point of worrying. Walk ahead, walk into the street. Don't wait for the cross sign, because that's not really what it means, obviously. But if something hits you, big deal. Okay, obviously that's an exaggeration, but it's an interesting turn of phrase that these people had. So the laws of Avilus are in order to get this out of our hearts. The Torah required us to engage in the mitzvah of Avilus. That it's good for people as well to reflect on what happened to them and again, as we said before, they didn't mention this, but to get back into society. Fine. Midine amitzvah alalachos are as follows. Mashom zechran levracha. Shiyom rishon hu daraisa v'shisha darabana. Again, this is the chinuch shita. We'll get to the other shitas later. That the first day of avelos is daraisa. But again, nowadays we hardly ever have avelos daraisa, even according to this shita, because it's very rare for the death and the burial to occur on the same day. And even if it does, so then it's only a couple hours of avelos daraisa. Usually, it's not at most. It's not the whole day of avelos at all. In Eretz Yisrael, it probably occurs more, especially in Yerushalayim, that they don't leave the dead body overnight. But in America, the death and the burial hardly ever on the same day, so we don't have to worry about Avilas Daraisa at all.
Really make, whether it's Daraisa or not, totally
not much. You're right. There's not much difference. Sveika l'chumra, if you have a doubt about something, about all the halachos, then you have to act stringently. But you're right. It's not. Wouldn't make such a difference anyway. Dafapi shenamar b'Torah. The Torah says v'yas la'aviv evil shivas yomim. Says he made for his father an avelus of 7 days. It also says that's the when Yaakovinu died. So his sons made him an avelus of 7 days. So it said, oh, the Jews were sitting shiva even way back then, even before Matan Torah. So yeah, you're right. They were in that case. They were sitting shiva, but it doesn't mean just because the Torah describes as that's how it's done before Matan Torah doesn't mean that's the Deraisa requirement. When the Torah was given, it's not prescriptive, it's descriptive.
Yeah.
And that was much later after Yaakov's death, right?
Right, because they had the embalming, which is also Jewish, shall we say, nowadays. Not a Jewish thing, 100%.
No.
It also says by Aaron HaKohen that they, or by Moshe, maybe both, that they mourned for 30 days, so they had Shloshim. So you have the concept of Shiva and Shloshim in the Torah, but nevertheless, none of them are technically required in a Daraisa level. They were optional avelos, that they were just so distraught by the deaths of these great, great people that they mourn for greater than the actual Daraisa requirement, which is, again, part of why the system is not as it's supposed to be, is not necessarily reflected in all the mitzvahs Daraisa.
Is embalming against Jewish law?
Yeah, because you're supposed to get back to the dust as fast as possible. You're not supposed to have anything that interferes with the return of the body to dust or decomposition. Yeah,
you're not supposed to cut it up either.
Right, you're not supposed to do it. Right, 100%.
Cut it up.
In bombing, you remove organs. Right, so in the ancient Egyptian tombs, they had the mummy, and then they had jars with the organs next to it. Right, because in the afterlife, the ancient Egyptians thought that the afterlife only lasted for as long as your body lasted. It wasn't of the soul.
Oh.
So in other words, they preserved the body so that it would last as long as possible, so that it would last forever, basically, so that you could live in the afterlife forever. But if you didn't have your body and all your organs, you know, in your little closet, so that you had your organs, then you weren't going to have the afterlife. So embalming was taken very seriously, but that's certainly not what we believe at all. So this is attributed to Moshe Rabbeinu, even though it has the status only of the Rabbanan. It wasn't Moshe Rabbeinu saying, God says we have to do this. It was Moshe Rabbeinu said, this is what Jewish people should do, that we should sit Shiva. And parallel to this, we have the concept of the Shiva's Yemei HaMishta. We have the 7 days following a wedding, which is when at least one of the parties has never been married before, so then you have to rejoice for 7 days. It's very similar to Shiva in reverse. You have parties, you don't have to have parties every day, but you could have parties with special brachos every day. Some people get sick of it, but
I was told that in Hungary, by somebody who's got a very good memory, only the Rebbes had Shiva's Yemei HaMishta at the wedding.
No. Shiva's Yemei HaMishta is definitely a halachic requirement. You mean they had Sheva brachos meals.
Right.
Yeah,
I thought that was.
You don't have to have meals every day during Shabbat brachas, but extra parties, why not? You only have Shabbat brachas once, hopefully.
Yeah.
So then you might as well take advantage, have as much as possible. No, the extra meals are not required; they're optional.
It's nice.
Yeah, but I wouldn't think that it's proper. It's exhausting, but I wouldn't think that it's proper to go the entire Shiva Yemei HaMishta without having a single quote unquote Shabbat brachas, one of the meals.
Also, it doesn't have to be 50 or 100 or whatever people every
right.
time. You have
the question is just whether
maybe if you want
required.
You know, a small
it's
group.
Not required.
What is it? Only the Rebbes had it.
What?
Only Rebbes in this time had Sheva Brahms.
That's probably right.
Sheva of them.
Right. Could be. I don't doubt that, right? You could take a day off, in other words, if it's particularly exhausting, you could, but it's not, yeah.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. No problem. And you're also not allowed to go to work the same way as Shiva, et cetera, but it's obviously for a happy reason, not for a sad reason. The requirement of Avelos only kicks in once the stone is put in, meaning this is talking about the olden days. So in the Jewish practice in the times of Bayasheni was not that the body got buried straight in the ground. It was that the body was put in a cave. It was buried in a cave for a while. And then when the body decomposed, then you would go and you would gather the bones, and then you would bury the bones directly in the ground. So the avelos only starts when the stone covering the entrance of the cave is put in place. So what's the modern analogy? obviously, when the grave is filled in. So the avilus doesn't start till the person is buried. He's already translated into modern terminology that that's when the body is covered with earth and in the graves, then avilus starts. So before that, so the person did not have any of the restrictions of avilus. Oh, we'll get to that in a minute, if that's really true. So the child of David and Bathsheba, the first one before Shlomo HaMelech was born, was very ill, and the child eventually died. So the whole time that the child was sick, so David HaMelech was fasting, and he was sitting on the floor, and he was davening. So finally, the child dies. Then he got up, and he washed, and he anointed himself because he said, well, there's nothing I can do anymore, so I have to, I'm going to go to the base, the Mishkan, whatever, and I'm going to give, give thanks to Gosh Baruch Hu that, accept the din on myself that this happened to me. So he had to be presentable in order to go to the Mishkan. So that's the raya that Sefer Chinuch brings, that before the burial, then none of the restrictions of Avelos would apply, because if you're an Avelos, obviously you're not allowed to wash, and you're not allowed to annoy yourself. So others give a different shot. Okay, so first we need a little bit of background, which is that from the time of death until the time of burial, the person is what we call a state of aninus. The person is an onen, which means that the person is so busy, even not practically, but halakhically speaking, the person is considered to be so busy and so distracted by all the preparations for the burial that the person is not considered to be compos mentis to perform mitzvos, and since they were dealing with not necessarily just compos mentis, but the person is so busy with preparing for the burial, so osig ba mitzvah patur min a mitzvah, that when you're dealing with a mitzvah to arrange for the burial, so you're exempt from positive commandments. You still have to observe negative commandments. Don't think, okay, you know, right, exactly. Exactly. I want to eat lobster. I always wanted to try lobster, so I'm going to wait till I'm in Aninos, and I'm going to try lobster. So that doesn't work. Still have to keep negative commandments, but you're exempt from positive commandments. You don't have to wash and bench and make brachos and daven and all these things. So during that time of Aninos, are the restrictions of Avelos in force or not? So according to Sefer Chinuch, no, the restrictions of Avelos are not in force at all. In fact, there are some restrictions that are in it that are not present in Avelos, that are in it present in Aninos. They are not allowed to eat meat or drink wine on weekdays, on Shabbos and the first day of Yom. That's a different discussion. So do the law. So according to some Rishonim, it's not true. According to some Rishonim, the restrictions of Avelos do apply during Aninos, with the exception of shoes, because you have to run around to do all the stuff for the burial, and you're not going to be able to do it properly unless you're wearing shoes. So it's interesting because I heard in Maisa that, I don't remember witnessing this personally, but that when Rav Schechter's father died, he showed up to the funeral in sneakers, mm-hmm. not in shoes.
He, Rav Schechter.
Yeah. So, what's the reason? He says, well, we should really observe all the halachas of Avelos during Aninos as well. And nowadays we have sneakers. So I'm going to be able to run around and do all the stuff for my father's burial with sneakers. Why do we need to be makel to wear real shoes nowadays? Which is interesting because it's a little bit funny because not everyone holds that you're allowed to wear sneakers during Avelos. So I guess he said it's better than nothing. Why be as machmir as possible so as not to wear real shoes at least. So according to that, if Aninos is usur in all these things and you're not really allowed to wash during Aninos either because the restrictions of Avelos basically do apply, so how did David HaMelech wash during this time? The answer is that think about Yom Kippur. What does the Mishnah say about Yom Kippur? That you're not allowed to wash on Yom Kippur except for a bride. A new bride is allowed to wash her face on Yom Kippur so that she shouldn't become, her new husband shouldn't see her in a less than ideal state. And what's the other exception that the Mishnah says? the melech, the king is allowed to wash his face as well, because there's a pasuk that says, melech b'yofio techazen aynecha, that the king always has to be presentable. They're not allowed to see the king in not less than ideal state of grooming. So that's why David HaMelech was allowed to do this, because there are specific exceptions for the king regarding the laws of Avelos. Just think about nowadays. If you go to England, I don't think Queen Elizabeth is ever going to appear in public in jeans. She just wouldn't. Nothing wrong with jeans. It's for regular people, but for the queen, it's not not something that's so right.
Hasidic rabbis would,
Right, Hasidic rabbis is the same, right? Hasidic rabbi is not going to, if he has to answer the door, he's not going to answer without his bekashan, because you always have to see the rebbe, who's sort of like a melech, in a manner that's presentable. So the same idea is over here, that the king had to wash his wash himself in some way, while even though he was technically not allowed to do so. So in general, again, we are stringent with this, except for the issue of wearing shoes, which again, maybe you may be able to get out of in some way by wearing sneakers instead, if they're not leather. Although we'll discuss later what's if that's really true. Umasha amru shekol shelosha shloshim yom ba'adam ein misablin olav. So a baby that's less than 30 days old, you don't perform avelos for. Why? Lefi shehu safek. Is not sure whether this is a real person or not. So what do I mean by a real person or not a real person? So the idea is that sometimes, so if a baby is born prematurely, then there's no chance that this baby is ever going to develop. I mean, and nowadays, again, it depends on exactly how prematurely, but in the olden days, if the baby wasn't born at the proper time, there was no chance, even from the moment it came out, that it was going to develop into an adult. So therefore, it's considered to be like a nafel, like a miscarriage, and there's no avelos. Again, very sad, and the person might need to have, you know, just sit and contemplate and, you know, grieve in their own way, but there's no formal avelos unless it's what's called a vlad shel kayama, that a child that's expected to be able to live until a ripe old age. Or at least, I mean, there's certain, a baby could be born, you know, with genetic conditions that will maybe not allow it to live past the age of a couple of years, a couple of months even. But as long as it can live 30 days, that's considered to be a full person, so to speak. If you know for sure that the pregnancy was absolutely full term and there was no intrinsic reason that the child should not have grown up to at least live for the 30 days or beyond, then there is avelos. So how can you be absolutely sure?
Yeah.
So the example that is in halacha is if the baby's parents had relations once and then abstained for 3 months. And then it was determined that the woman was pregnant. So then you know for sure that the conception occurred at that time. Normally you can't pinpoint exactly when the moment of conception was. V'chein l'chol shar hadvarim dino ka'adam shalim. The same thing too, that even if a baby that we know for sure had a full term pregnancy would be considered to be a full person even from the moment that it was born. So what's another example of being a full person versus a not full person? So normally, if you kill a baby under the age of 30 days, so we're not sure if it's a nafel, like a quasi-miscarriage, or late, you know, post-birth miscarriage, you could call it, I guess. I mean, in English, such a term doesn't exist, but in halacha does exist. So then the person would not be liable for the penalty of murder because the baby is not considered a full person. But if you knew for sure that if it was a full-term pregnancy, then the person could be put to death for killing the baby even on the day it was born. But normally, but once a baby is 30 days old, then always going to be chayiv for murder if you kill this baby. That anybody who removes themselves from Jewish ways, that people who don't believe in God, minim, don't believe in traditional Jewish beliefs, and mishumadim, that they convert to another religion, that they completely abandon the Jewish religion, that people who go ahead giving away Jews, straight traders, that they give away the Jews to the secular authorities, Kol elu ein misablin aleihen klal. You don't perform avilas at all for such people. Shemizasan simcha hila olam. That if their death is an opportunity to rejoice and not an opportunity to mourn. And I would hasten to add that this does not apply to regular not from Jews nowadays, for the most part. That people who just Nebuch, they weren't raised properly. They didn't grow up as part of the Jewish community, and they're not generally institutionally trying to rebel against Judaism and to undermine the Jewish people, at least consciously. I mean, maybe they just don't know better. But most people, certainly not everyone, but certainly some people who whose death would be a simcha, but most ordinary, not from Jews, would not be subject to this.
So if a genuine Russia died, is it a suddis mitzvah to celebrate his,
Why not? Yeah?
All right. Really? Okay.
I mean, it's not supposed to be excessively...
I mean, so, in other words, like, during the 9 days, you couldn't, you know...
Right, it'd be full of ayivcha al tismach, that when you're... enemy dies, don't be overly rejoiceful, but you should be happy. It's a good thing that these people died, so why should you be sad? So that's part of this plays into the fact, I think Mrs. Birnbaum was talking the other day about people she knew who got a psak not to sit shiva for their parents because they were abused or terrible things happened to them. So again, I don't know if that's necessarily qualifies a person in general as parish midarchei tzibur, but if you're genuinely, yeah, it's hard, each situation has to be assessed independently, but if you really, first it dies, you feel no sadness whatsoever, and you're just happy that such a wicked person is out of your life, so then perhaps, you should, there is room to consider not having to do avelos at all.
But I thought you said that shiva was, I mean, the answer you actually gave then was that shiva is kind of an automatic thing. It's after that.
Well, again, that's what I'm saying. It's hard to say. Again, even if somebody does something really bad, like child molesting, I don't, especially if they have some sort of regret for it, but even if not, it's hard to say that, again, as terrible as it is, even in murder, if you commit one murder in your life, again, that's horrible, terrible, but because you did that once, it doesn't render you a poresh midarchei tzibur and a min and a mishumad. It doesn't mean that you have distanced yourself completely from the ways of the Jewish people. Yes, once you did.
So this would be like leaders, like people who turned traitor on the Jewish state and, you know, informed the Egyptians or that kind of thing. That
right.
That would be not
or
so controversial.
Like someone like Spinoza, for example.
Really?
Spinoza was in his time in Amsterdam. All the Jews were regular. I mean, they use the term frum. Frum just means pious in Yiddish German. But they were all observant, perfectly good Jews. And then he, all of a sudden, of his own accord, decided to rebel. And he wrote all these books against Judaism. And he was put into cherem. So, yes. Well, cherem is a different thing. Somebody dies during cherem. So you do avelos with other avelos. But he was worse. He was worse than some of the time in cherem.
Was anyone in avelos for him?
I don't know historically if it was true. But I'm saying we're talking about someone like that when we say that you should rejoice at their death and that you shouldn't sit shiva.
But the idea, though, that you know, the person dies, that's a kapara for, you know, favors that they may have done. So, you know, I mean, why should, doesn't that count? Like somebody's a murderer and they die. Well, at that point, okay, the plate's right clean. So, you know, right?
Well, for that, yes, but for what Spinoza did, it did not wipe him clean. We assume that he is not going to get any Olam Haba. You know, he's his death can only accomplish so much of...
It's interesting, Charlie said there's an article in the current Chakira about the difference between Frankfurt and Berlin in terms of the response against, right?
Oh, right,
the
question of
Auschwitz. Sort of related to this.
Which is that elsewhere in Germany, you know, that it was possible, in fact, to coexist to a certain extent, you know, with the Reform, you know, community, because they were, in fact, you know, they weren't, you know, rebelling, you know, lahakis, it was le teavon, right? In other words, that they, but then Frankfurt, you know, unusually, in fact, they were actively trying to uproot, you know, Judaism.
So for those leaders of the Reform community in Frankfurt in the early 19th century, then possibly, yes, if they had a child who was still observant, or any relative who was still observant, so very possible you would pass, and they did not need to sit shiva, 100%. Yeah, someone nowadays, I was thinking maybe someone like Mordechai Kaplan.
Yeah.
It might be someone of this nature. Or, you know, the people who converted to other religions, like what's his name, who disputed with the Ramban. There were the famous...
Christian.
So he was originally Jewish, and he converted to Christianity, and he was instigating all these things about how the leaders of Spain at the time orchestrated this dispute with him and the Ramban. So he would also be someone like this. We're talking about people who are really rebelling. We're not talking about Stam, you know, Nebuch, people who are not fully observant Jews. How you exactly you define this is would depend very much on the situation. Ve'ein ze onesh l'krovim, aval zchus hu lahem. It's if you are a family member of a wicked person, so if this person dies, you shouldn't take it as a punishment. Say that God is making life easier for you. So you should just be thankful and be happy.
People who hate you, God, I will hate as well.
If you commit suicide, ain mesablim alav, you don't have a velos. So how do you know that the person really committed suicide? So what do you mean? You know the person committed suicide. The person obviously left a note, whatever, is considered mesablim atzmo ladas. So I have to tell you that it's very, very, very rare nowadays, basically unheard of, actually to consider someone a halachic suicide. Halachic suicide means that the person philosophically wanted to end his or her life and felt life was not worth living, b'shita, and doesn't believe in it, so therefore who cares, and just offs him or herself. And there's a reason that motivates a person to commit suicide, that halachically the person is not considered to be in the category of ma'abed atzmo ladas, is considered onus k'shol. That Shaul HaMelech committed suicide. He was pretty religious, so who gave him a heter to do that? So he realized that the Philistines were going to win the battle, and that they were going to capture him and torture him and make a bizayon that they captured the Jewish king. And it was going to be a slap in the face and a terrible thing, calamity to Klal Yisrael in general. So he fell on his own sword. He committed suicide in order to prevent this happening. So in such a situation, the person is not considered to be an Abed Atzmon Ladas. And certainly nowadays, that depression is well understood, that people who commit suicide are suffering from a serious mental illness, chemical imbalances, et cetera, various psychological and physiological things. So if somebody is so depressed that they commit suicide, so we do not paskin ma'abed atzmo ladas. It really has to be someone who's in their right mind completely, and commit suicide would be someone who's halachically ma'abed atzmo ladas. So again, this halacha is basically unheard of.